Welcome to the Overeaters Anonymous 51st birthday panel discussion entitled Recovering the Fumble. Our panelists will be sharing their experience, strength, and hope about relapse. My name is Kim, and I am a compulsive overeater and your leader for today's panel. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Please take a moment now to turn off all cell phones or other electronic beeping devices. Our OA preamble states, Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and recover from compulsive overeating. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members, and we are self-supporting through our own contributions. OA is not affiliated with any religious sect or denomination, a political organization or institution. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and to carry this message of recovery to those who still suffer. I have stated that I am a compulsive overeater. Are there any other compulsive overeaters present? It's not on the script, so I don't want to deviate. Our three panelists will share their experience, strength, and hope on today's topic for 12 minutes each. Our timer in the front row will hold up signs indicating 2 minutes left and time up. After panelists share, we will take questions. There are pencils, papers, and a few asket baskets circulating the room. Please write your question on a sheet of paper, fold it, and place it in the asket basket. Indicate whether your question is addressed to a particular panelist or is open for anyone to respond. Please keep the asket basket circulating. Our first speaker is Alisa. Please join me in welcoming Alisa.
Hi, I'm Alisa. Can you all hear me? And I am a compulsive overeater and a hardcore sugar addict.
Hi.
And I have been in program for almost 20 years. The first Saturday in April, God willing, and the creek don't rise, I will be here 20 years. And in those 20 years, I have had many different lengths of abstinence. My bottom line abstinence is no sugar. And also in that time, I have relapsed. And I want to define for myself what relapse is. It may not be your definition, but for me, when I feel that I'm in relapse, it's not only taking back sugar, it's a way of eating and of obsessing, the old way of obsessing about sugar. When am I going to eat it again? Where am I going to get it? How much of it am I going to eat? And how much more can I eat without having it show on my body? And that was my MO for years and years and years. I would have months of relapse. Several times I reached a one-year anniversary with my abstinence, but for the past just 4 years plus, I have been totally abstinent from sugar. And this is a gift, thank you, this is a gift of the program. So for me, relapse is not just eating like a piece of something that has sugar in it. It's going back to the way I used to be. And I don't want to go there anymore. It did not do me any good at all in any part of my life. Getting back, but I did learn. I had what the best experiences I've had in relapse is I have learned from them. I have learned what triggers me. I have learned which steps in program I need to do specifically to overcome relapse, to get back into the groove of abstinence. And I don't do anything perfectly. Never have, and I'm sure as a human being that I never will. I also have a cheat sheet because I don't always remember everything that I want to say. This 4 years ago, just a little over 4 years ago, I got my current abstinence after doing steps 6 and 7 yet again. And what I had to do was really be ready to have God remove all of my defects of character. I had given it lip service, but I don't think I had ever really deeply understood that is what I needed to do. And I prayed a lot for the willingness to be able to say, I honestly want my higher power to remove my defects of character. And I'm still working on them. And then the seventh step, humbly asked him. And we just did this step in my Tuesday afternoon meeting where we read both the OA and the AA 12 and 12. And this is a question of true humility, which has never been my strong suit. I am one of those people who I think was born feeling that I had to know everything. I had to have the answer to every question that was put to me. And if I didn't, it meant in my own mind that I was, first of all, lacking intelligence, that I was absolutely stupid. And being stupid, I would not get the kind of support that I needed from my family. I had a family that just loved to put people down. And I wasn't singled out or anything. They did it to everybody. Nobody ever met their standards, and being as imperfect as I am, I never met their standards, and consequently they became my standards and I never met them either, nor did I ever meet any other human being who could live up to the standards that I thought were right until I walked into these rooms and I heard the rest of you tell me, you know, we're not perfect either. And let me tell you, I was so relieved to learn that, because this is something that was a really deeply held secret within me. I had to hold on to it. And I also held on to anger and resentment, particularly toward my family of origin. And whenever those, you know, flames died down, so to speak, I'd get out the old bellows and I'd pump it up with some air, and I made sure that anger and resentment was never going to disappear, that I was going to keep it going because I was entitled. They had done this to me. None of this was of my own making. They did it to me, and now I'm going to give it back to them. I'm going to give to others what was, you know, done to me. And one day I was in a doctor's office having some body work done, and I was thinking about steps 6 and 7, and I started to cry, and I just, in the doctor's office, in a treatment room, I just cried. That's all there is to it. And realized that not only I had made amends to most of the people, having done the steps, you know, more than once, I had made amends to the most important people in my life, but I'd never made amends to myself. And this is where I came to forgiveness. Forgiveness to myself. And then the biggest weight of all was lifted when I was able to ask God to remove my anger and resentment toward my mother. And I did. It happened. God answered my prayer. And I no longer carry that anger and resentment toward her around with me. Nor do I really with any other people. Even, you know, sometimes you meet people who are not so nice. What I've learned is everybody has a story. If I have a story, you have a story too. And I don't know your story. And if I'm meeting you for the first time and you are less than gracious, I don't know what just happened to you. I don't know if you lost a child. I don't know if you're going through a divorce, if you've lost a husband, if you're out on the street. And it has made me more willing to be forgiving of others. And that removed a lot of the compulsion to overeat, because with the food, and particularly with foods that contain sugar, I just stuffed down all the feelings. All I was left with were negative feelings. I didn't really understand positive feelings. I certainly had none for myself. I really had no humility. I would put myself down and say, that's humility. Well, that's not humility. That's self-hatred. And what I learned to do is to say, other people have a story, I have a story too, but I don't have to act it out with other people. I don't have to let them see my pain or my anger and my resentment. And with relapse, each time I went through a relapse, and it happened several times, I was able to go deeper and deeper into myself because I used the steps and the tools of the program. No matter how much I felt like not coming to a meeting, because if I was in relapse, it meant I didn't deserve to be with people. I had to hide myself away. That's what I did. But in program, gradually, one little baby step at a time, I have been able to start, realize that when I'm in relapse or having any kind of anger, resentment, the first place I need to go is to a meeting. And we're so lucky here in LA to have so many meetings to choose from in so many areas at so many different times. I can't think of anything else to say except that for me, for relapse, program is the answer. And for me, it's in the steps and it's in the tools. And I have even on occasion picked up the telephone and made an outreach call. I've been in program almost 20 years. I think I've done that at least 6 times in the past 20 years. I have picked up a phone to make an outreach call. Not my biggest strength, but I'm working on it. And I'm hoping that as other things have opened up to me, as the world has opened more and more, and as I have opened myself to the world more and more, thanks to this program, more gradual help will come to me when I ask for it. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Lisa. Our next speaker is Michelle. Please join me in welcoming Michelle.
Hi, I'd like to thank Valerie for asking me to speak. It is really an honor to be able to give service. My name is Michelle. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic. I ate compulsively for 30 years and I purged for 23. And by the grace of God and this wonderful program, I have 2 years, 8 months, and 3 days of abstinence. My program, I wish I could say I came in 2 years, 8 months, and 3 days ago, but I didn't. I came into the rooms in 2001, and I was in and out. I relapsed many times. I wrote something that I want to share with you, which best expresses what it was like and what happened, and it's called My Disease Wants Me Dead. My disease wants me dead. Emotionally, physically, and spiritually. And the main way it does so is by shaming me. For example, my disease wants me to feel ashamed in telling you that my mother was an addict and so was my father. That my father left us when I was still a baby and we were poor living on the west side of Chicago. And that I know all too well about food stamps and government cheese and thrift stores and the gas being shut off. But the fact is, none of that matters today. I'm an addict and I have a disease that wants me dead. It tells me I'm not worth living. But my God, this program and all of you tell me differently. You see, I am a miracle. A miracle is an event believed to be caused by interposition of divine intervention by a supernatural being in the universe by which the ordinary operation of nature is overruled, suspended, or modified. For example, my mother was born with all her eggs at birth, and only one of those was me. After puberty, my father produced sperm daily, and he was a rolling stone, which meant I could have landed up anywhere. But instead, there was a plan for my life. I was meant to be. A power greater than me already had a design for my life. But my disease doesn't want me to believe that. My disease wants me dead. My disease used to be my very best friend. I mean, when I had no one to turn to, she was there for me. She comforted me and helped me to handle situations and emotions I could not handle. She knew all my secrets and thoughts, but one day I realized ours was not a healthy relationship. And everyone did not have a friend like this. A friend that held me hostage, kept me isolated, miserable, and all alone. A friend that wanted me dead. I was so terrified when I realized my disease wanted me dead, because I really, really do want to live. I didn't eat compulsively and purge for all those years because I wanted to die. I was just afraid of living. When I'm honest with myself, I truly want to love and be loved. I want amazing relationships and experiences, so I tried to get rid of my disease. But I was really scared because I realized she wasn't going to let me go without a fight. So I stayed around. We went back and forth for years, breaking up, making up, and fighting like cats and dogs, all with me wanting to live and her wanting me dead. I was stuck. I didn't know what to do. I found my way to the OA doors, and I found you all. And you were just like me. You understood me, and you said to me to put my hand in yours, and together we could do what we could never do alone. And I almost cried. And I thought, there is a solution, but my disease said, you can't trust them. Besides, I was there for you when your own family wasn't. I comforted you. I kept you safe. It's you and me, baby. They don't know you like I do. They don't know what we've been through, and they won't be here for you like I've been. So I left with her. And I ate my feelings away, and I continued to purge and kill myself. My disease is cunning and baffling, but the truth of the matter is I wasn't willing to let her go. I still had feelings for her. I still thought she was my friend. But whenever I got really tired of her, I would come back, and you all were still here. And that really messed me up because my disease told me I couldn't count on you. Then I heard you say that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And my disease laughed and said, your God is what you turn to in time of trouble, and you turn to me. I am your God. My disease was my God, and she wanted me dead, and yet I didn't leave her alone. I couldn't. I was sick. My disease was slowly but surely killing me. But when the pain began to outweigh the pleasure, I found step two, and this is what I read. Finally, when all our scorecards read zero and we saw that one more strike would put us out of the game forever, we had to look at our lost faith. We saw that we had to reconsider or die. To clergymen, doctors, friends, and families, the compulsive overeater who means well and tries hard is a heartbreaking riddle. To most OAs, he is not. There are too many of us who have been just like him and have found the riddle's answer. The answer has to do with the quality of faith rather than its quantity. This has been our blind spot. We suppose we had humility when really we hadn't. We suppose we had been serious about religious practices when upon honest appraisal we found we had only been superficial. The fact was we really hadn't cleaned house so that the grace of God could enter us and expel the obsession. In no deep or meaningful sense have we ever taken stock of ourselves, made amends to those we had harmed, or freely given to any other human being without any demand for reward. We had not even prayed rightly. We had always said, grant me my wishes instead of thy will be done. The love of God and man we understood not at all. Therefore, we remained self-deceived and incapable of receiving enough grace to restore us to sanity. Therefore, step two is the rallying point for us all. Whether agnostic, atheist, or former believer, we can stand together on this step. True humility and an open mind can lead us to faith. My disease has not changed. It still wants me dead. The difference is just for today, thanks to my amazing love affair with God, this amazing 12-step program and this fellowship, I am no longer a willing participant in my death. What it's like for me today, I work this program. Some days I don't want to, some days I'm tired, but I remember what it was like in the disease. And every time I remember, then I know that there's work to do. Someone, I have a very good friend in program who talks about how the disease is always there. She told me the other day she went to the bathroom in the middle of the night and the disease was like, you're fat. And we kind of laugh about it, but that's what the disease does. And I don't forget that today. I lived in this disease. I don't act like the disease is not there, but I just don't listen to it as much as I used to. It does beat me up sometimes. The other day, I got really down, and I really wasn't willing to reach out, but I did ask God to help me, and I was able to call my sponsor and talk about it. What's amazing is I thought that once I could put the food down, that all of a sudden, magically, everything would correct itself. But what I learned is that I had to really work my program. So I worked all the steps. You cannot work this program without working the steps. And when I see struggles, I can identify because that was my story. I didn't work the steps all those times I was coming in and out of the room. And it's amazing to me because I thought it was too many steps. It's like 12 of them. What? And they're like numbered and in order. I was like, this is not that difficult. But I definitely made it such, and my disease did as well. I have a sponsor today. I love her. She has what I want. When I saw her, I was like, she has what I want. She's not my first sponsor. She's my fifth sponsor. But my program is not based upon her, though I do love her. I had a sponsor before who lost her abstinence, and I had to find another sponsor, and that's how I found this sponsor. But in the beginning, when I had a sponsor, I thought we'd be together for life, like a marriage or something. And so when we broke up, I was all devastated, and that was one of the times that I left the program. I know today the big book talks about how we become more and more dependent upon God and less upon man. So I know that today I cannot base all my faith in my sponsor, though I do love her and she works this program. Every morning I get up, I thank God for waking up. I'm getting older. People sometimes laugh when I say that, but I'm the oldest I've ever been, and I'm starting to have people die. And it's starting to make me look at my own mortality. And so I get up and I just say, thank you, God, for waking me up this morning. And then I say the step three prayer. I read for today and Voices of Recovery. I check it with my sponsor every single day, or at least I try to. And there's times I don't reach her, and it's okay. I do use the phone. I'm a talker. I like to talk. In the beginning, I didn't like to talk about my problem or this problem. And then I met a woman in Chicago, a long timer, who said to me, or old timer, she said, talking to you're sick and tired of talking, just don't eat. And that became kind of like my mantra for the phone. So if I called you and I felt like I talked to you too much, I just hang up and call somebody else, because I was like, well, she's probably tired of hearing this. So, but it prevented me from eating. And sometimes I talked on the phone for like 2 hours to like five different people. I do pray every single day when I say the step three prayer. I'm not as good at meditating yet. I'm trying. I've been doing like 3-minute intervals trying to find a way to do that, but it is something that I am working on. I do have a food plan. Being bulimic, purging is not an option for me at all. It is not an option. And I do have a plan. I have lost 35 pounds. I gained about 50 pounds coming into the program because I stopped purging. And lo and behold, I was a compulsive reader. I didn't think I was. My disease told me I wasn't because it was like, you look fine. But when I stopped purging, the weight came on. I don't work any of these perfectly. I need to be honest with you. And I'm glad that this program doesn't require me to do that. What my life is like today, I recently moved to California to pursue my dreams, my passion. And my husband and children came along, and we are out here together. I could not have done that without this program. I am actually, for the first time in my life, exactly where I believe I'm supposed to be, and that feels really exciting and scary, and I know that I could not do it without working this program. The school that I'm attending, I went to see a counselor there, and I told her about the program and everything, and I said, you know, I should have been out here sooner. And she said, no, you're here when you need to be. And she explained to me that there are other young women and men in the school who suffer from the same illness that I do, who can't even attend their classes because they're vomiting all day and they're obsessing about food. And I don't do that. I go to class and I sit in the front and I did well. And I'm just really grateful today. I'm grateful to be asked to speak, to be of service, and I will keep coming back. Thank you.
Our final speaker is Rod. Please join me in welcoming Rod.
Not sure how to do this. Can you hear me okay? I'm Rod. I'm a grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. And I asked specifically to speak last because I have not relapsed in the traditional sense of relapse. And so my experience, strength, and hope here is to just project, hopefully, a tangential sort of view. So I'll qualify to start with. I came into the program on the 23rd of January of 1990, and I found my abstinence on the 7th of February of the same year, about 2 weeks later. And when I came into program, there was no way that I could do another diet. No way. The usual story, I'd done so many that the bridge to that sort of thing was just, you know, wiped out by the flood of all that. And as you can see by looking at me today, I am not runway competitive, okay? Meaning my body size isn't runway competitive. But to qualify further, I have given away 8 inches from around my waist. And I'm someone who picked up weight at the waist and above. So, and it was lifted from me effortlessly, I might say, but slowly and in phases. And about 5 or 6 years ago, I asked myself, why am I still here? Because I've seen so many people recover to the point where they don't feel they need a program anymore. And I've seen so many other people go out because they couldn't find their way here. And it became very, very clear to me that the first three steps, and I've worked them all, by the way, but the first three steps are really, really part of my fabric. I am powerless over food to this day, and my life could be very unmanageable. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and that power has restored me to sanity. It's helped me heal relationships. It's given me a faith that I don't need to live in fear. And then step three, that I became willing to turn my will and my life over to a power greater than myself. And my abstinence is not perfect. Okay? And I'm willing to say that very clearly. But having said that, I'll also say that spiritually and emotionally, I have more recovery than I can even express gratitude for. Physically, that 8 inches has stayed away from my waistline. It does fluctuate. But after 13 years of not eating sugar, which is my primary abstinence, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And I thought, is this like a real joke or just sort of an ironic joke, you know, that that what I eat, what I'm allowed to eat, what I'm supposed to eat has now really, really narrowed a lot. Whereas I could eat almost anything previously, with the exception of sugar, now it's like, you know, very few carbohydrates. And And carbohydrate is like my middle name. So it's been pretty restrictive for me. And I sometimes want to break out of that little box that I eat within. And I do break out of it. A friend of mine who hailed from China, before I came into program, he said to me, bamboo bends, but it doesn't break. You know, and that really speaks to me about my program now and my food plan specifically, meaning that if I do go outside the box, it doesn't have to be the excuse that I need to just keep going with it. And when I do go outside the box, I get back on the horse. Okay? I am so grateful that I am powerless over food because I'm an isolator. All right? I don't want to let anyone know what's going on with me. And you people have taught me to, you know, you've helped me, I should say, set that aside. You've helped me to trust you, to let you into my life. When I came into program, that telephone weighed, you've heard it before, 2,000 pounds, you know. I've had, speaking again about my powerlessness and my belief in how this program works, I've had experiences with sponsors that could have been an excuse to leave program. I had one sponsor, after a group conscience in a meeting where I voted contrary to what that sponsor wanted, that sponsor said to me, and this is not an editorial so much as it's just making a point, that sponsor said to me, I don't ever want to see you again. Okay? And, you know, it was jarring. So what did I do? You know, I was uncomfortable. I started going to other meetings. Okay? I knew that I needed to be here. I'm the one who adapted to that. I had another sponsor who was an iconic guru in more than one program who found another higher power by the name of Mary Jane, okay? That being the other way to say marijuana, and who left program, you know? So I felt somewhat abandoned by that, but you know what? I knew that I was powerless over food. I knew that my life was unmanageable. I knew that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and I was willing to turn my will and my life over to a power greater than myself. I have sponsored people who, I sponsored one fellow who came in before me and who was at one point an exercise bulimic before that sort of thing was really talked about a lot the way it is now. And he injured his back and he went from looking like a weightlifter to looking like 330 pounds. Okay? And he lost his abstinence, if you will, because he couldn't exercise anymore. And I sponsored him for 10 years, and he wasn't able to gain his abstinence back. My point of view was not wanting to fix him. It wasn't an ego kind of thing with me. Rather, it was I just wanted to be of service if I could. It came to the point that after 10 years, I said, you know, I think maybe I'm hindering you instead of helping you. And about a year ago, a little over a year ago, he got a lap band. And what he said to me was, this lap band made me have to work the problem. I mean, the program, excuse me. I really had to work it more than ever, because he knew that it itself wasn't a solution, you know. Now he's, you know, taken it off and he's still here, okay. My faith is really important to me in terms of the way that it's built. When I was new in program, there was a period where I sort of levitated. You've probably heard other people say that too. I mean, I had a powerful spiritual connection, and you know, somebody could have slapped me across the face and I would have turned the other cheek, you know. Well, I won't do that anymore, but so I'm not levitating anymore. But I have small miracles happen all the time that I believe are from God. I ask for help from God in His will. You know, I'm committed here. I can see I'm committed here for life. So, you know, I heard when I first came into program, when an airplane takes off from Los Angeles, headed for New York, when it goes off course a little bit, it corrects. It doesn't turn around and go back to Los Angeles and start all over again. So I'm grateful that kind of thing can apply to me. And Valerie, thank you very much for asking me to speak.
Thank you, panelists. Can we give them another round of applause? It's now time for questions. We'll stop at 11:10. Deal, no deal. What did we have here? This question is to Michelle and Elisa. Before you relapsed, were there signs, excuse me, before you relapsed? If so, what were they?
Yes, for me there were signs. I was dishonest. Step one teaches honesty, and I hadn't even worked that step yet. Dishonest in that I wasn't willing to tell my sponsor that I was struggling because I didn't want her to be mad or drop me. And I had to admit that when I finally got abstinent in June of 2008, I had to have a sponsor that I could tell her the truth. So for me, it was being dishonest with myself and others, and that was the sign. And any time that I know today that I'm not willing to be honest with my sponsor, I'm in trouble, and I need to just tell on my disease very quickly.
I have pretty much the same experience of not being honest, but also of realizing that the obsession is returning. When I start thinking only about food and how to get it, and I'm making my addiction my number one priority instead of making my life my number one priority, and if I don't want to tell my sponsor or anybody else about it, then I know I'm heading for trouble. And so the first thing I do is I do tell my sponsor. And she has been just extraordinarily helpful to me in every way. I have this current sponsor, I've only been working with her less than a year, but she has really done a lot for me. I'm so grateful to her. So, yeah, it's when I feel that mental obsession where I don't want to think about anything but food. I don't want to do anything that's good for me. And if I start thinking of myself as a piece of shit who doesn't deserve anything, I know I'm headed for trouble, and this is where I have to catch it. This is where I have to, the first thing I have to do is talk to my sponsor.
Okay. Thank you. Our next question is addressed to the entire panel. What do you do about the shame and self-loathing that comes from not doing it perfectly? Thank you. Anyone can address all. Jump in.
I'd like to say this for myself personally. I work the steps. Whenever I'm feeling shame, which is a lot because I have a disease that always comes in and tells me, like you said, I'm a piece of shit. Good example, in my program, I'm one of the oldest students. My disease was like, oh, you are so old. And I really struggled with that. But I work the steps. And when you get to step 6 and 7, part of it was my sponsor reminding me, are you really willing to let this go? And I had to realize I was getting something from it because I could call people and be like, I'm so sad, I'm so old, blah, blah, blah. And then I was finally able to just say, okay, I'm tired of this now. And my sponsor will remind me, she's like, are you done being two? And I'm like, okay. And honestly, that's it. It's working. It's not magic. It's working the steps, and it's staying in constant communication with my sponsor and my OA family.
Very quickly, I'm in a profession where we used to work a lot with pencils, and early on I learned that it didn't take me long to wear all the erasers off all of my pencils, so that helps me. I do feel those things, but that reminds me that that's the status quo. So.
Okay. I no longer feel shame at being a compulsive eater. I did a lot. The past few years, that seems to have been lifted from me, and I can't tell you how grateful I am. I've also learned that nothing lasts forever. Not good, not bad. And that there is a solution, and the solution is program. It took me a very long time to learn that, but I'm, because this program is so spiritual, and I was not a spiritual person when I came into program, I could barely say the G word. I mean, I always referred to an HP, a higher power, hardly ever to God. Now I can say God and it doesn't bother me, because I realize that miracles do happen in this program, and I'm one of those miracles, and that in spite of a number of serious illnesses in the past 20 years, I'm still here, I'm still in recovery. And I look at my past relapses, and I may have more in the future, I don't know, but they're all part of recovery. They don't exist on their own, apart from anything in program.
Thank you, panel. Okay, those are the end of our question and answer period. I beg your pardon? Okay. Are there any questions from our studio audience? Yes, ma'am. All right.
How do you let go of resentment and then come to accept it? How do you do that?
Okay. How do you let go of resentment and come to accept it?
I can speak on that because I had a very strong resentment towards my father, very strong. And even when I worked the steps, I told my sponsor I was not willing to make amends to him at all and that he would die before I would do them. And she simply said, just keep praying about it. Just keep working the steps. It's okay. And one day, honestly, I felt convicted. I couldn't get him off my mind. And before I moved out here, I actually called him. I hadn't talked to this man in 20 years. I called him and said, I'd like to talk to you. And though my disease wanted me to attack everything I thought he had done wrong, it doesn't tell us to do that. I had to make amends to my father for not going to his mother's funeral. And when he asked me why I didn't go, I told him the truth, thanks to this program, which I said, it was to spite you. And he said, thanks for your honesty. I'm not saying we're skipping, we're holding hands and everything is perfect, but I was able to make amends to my father, and I promise you, I didn't think I would do that. It was because I prayed and I asked God to help me become willing to do it, and I didn't want to do it, but it worked anyway.
There's two things that I've done that have helped me. One is that I follow what it says in the chapter called The Freedom from Bondage, where the lady suggests that you pray for the person that you resent and ask God to bless them with everything you want for yourself, good health, happiness, and abundance. And even when I'm feeling reluctant to do that, one thing that I do is to add the names of people that I really care about to the list. So I'll, you know, pray for the jerk and my mom and my sister and my nieces, and, you know, like that. And so they're all in the same family that gets lifted up. The other thing that has really helped me, because I am a self-centered lot, and one day I was sitting and I was thinking about my mom, who I had a resentment towards her that was long-standing, and I realized that throughout my whole life, my mother has never ever said anything disparaging about any religion, race, sexuality, nothing like that. She's not prejudiced. And I took that for granted because my mom is not one of these do-gooders who lets everybody know about her, you know, stuff. And then I was reading through either the OA step workbook or the OA 12 and 12, and I was reading under step 4 where you take the inventory, and one of the questions there was, are you prejudiced? And I realized that I could use the book, those questions, as a tool of taking a positive inventory of the person that I resent, not a negative one, okay? And it really helped me build a positive attitude. I took my discovery, my awareness, my new awareness about my mom to her, and I said, thank you for that, you know? And it's helped us build a better relationship. So,
I still, first of all, to say, my anger and resentment was also tied up with self-righteousness. They deserved my anger and resentment, and I deserved to hold on to it because of the horrible things that they had done to me. And right before I got this current abstinence, I had part of why I was crying in the doctor's office is I realized, because of something that was going on in my extended family through my cousins, what a horrendous life my mother had lived. And that was part of what I finally was able to feel compassion. And when I started to feel compassion for myself, I could start feeling compassion for the people that I self-righteously thought had wronged me. And that has, you know, being able to, that's what helped me to give it up, is to realize that they had terrible, terrible lives. They were doing the best they could. And that's what I'm doing too. I'm doing the best I can. You know, I guess that's about it. I just kept plugging away at it. I have a resentment toward my brother that I am gradually overcoming. It's a very long-standing resentment, and it's not his fault. It's coming directly from me. But I've been working on it for a very long time, and I can feel the release coming. Every week when I speak with him, the anger and resentment melts away a little bit more. So these things don't come to me very quickly, but when they do, I'm very grateful for them. Thank you.
Yes.
This is
my sponsor lost her abstinence, I was literally dropped that day. I was devastated. It was like the 4th of July weekend, and I was like, what the hell? Like, what do I do? But I knew that I had to find another sponsor, and so I just immediately started saying, everybody, I need a sponsor, I need a sponsor. When I began to sponsor, I've had, and I've been very, very blessed to work with other bulimics, which to me is really a miracle of this program. And for me, the key is to, one, really honestly get them to work the steps as quickly as possible, like the big book suggests, so that when they do struggle, we have something to come back to and work together, as long as they're willing. For example, I have a young woman that I work with who bench and purge the other night, and what we did, we worked the steps together. She's worked the steps before, but we had to work through them to get to what was going on, and she was willing to go forth from that point. So for me, in both instances, it was working the steps. Now, when my sponsor lost her abstinence, I had gotten to step four. So when I started working with my current sponsor, I've been working with for the longest time, I thought she was going to make me go back, and she was like, no, you already worked four, let's just go ahead. And that, to me, was really the best, because I kept thinking I had to start over if I got a new sponsor. And she was like, no, we go from where you are. And that's just really how I work with sponsees. We go from where they are, and we just really work it. But I don't carry them, because my sponsor reminds me I can only carry the message, and that's all she does for me as well.
For me, it was just acceptance and an awareness that it would probably be a slow process for me to find another sponsor because of the ratio of men in the program. It took a while. I availed myself, though, of like Maxine used to give this two-weekend program where she would take you all the way through step 8 and 9 in 2 weekends, and that was helpful. And that was my process with it. So,
yes. I've never had a sponsor tell me that she had relapsed, but I had one person I did sponsor who had a very difficult struggle with relapse. And we worked the steps. She did a lot of writing at my suggestion. We talked about it a lot. And after too long a time, at least 2 or 3 years, I finally released her with love. And I said, I'm so sorry. You can always call me, but I think you need another sponsor, because I'm not doing you any good at all. And I wanted her recovery more than anything else. And so she did for a while continue to call me. I have not heard from her in a few years now, so I really don't know how she's doing. But I think that sometimes you have to release people with love.
Yes.
Yes, would you lay in the back? Yes. And then I'm pointing at. Okay, thank you for your question. Panel, there's one, we're coming towards the end, and there's another group coming in, so could one of you just address that briefly, and then maybe talk to the individual afterward who would like to take it? No.
She just said, what's the difference between a slip and relapse completely? I have a friend in program who likes to say you slip on a banana. He really believes in following whatever the plan is that you have. I do the same. For me, relapse would be, I would be back in the toilet. That's my definition of abstinence. And also, when I got abstinent, I realized that I also am a compulsive eater. And so for me, also, binging is not an option. And so as far as what you're talking, I don't believe in the slipping thing. If I purge, I've lost my abstinence. I'm relapsed. And I don't have to purge for days. I can just purge once for me. I don't want to play with this disease because it is a killing disease, and it's slow, but it's killing. And so for me today, that's what I do. I follow what is suggested, and it is tough. It is really tough. I'll give you an example. I recently started eating this particular cereal that I was too damn happy about eating. Like, it ran out. I was like, oh, who ate my cereal? You know? And my husband was like, you know, this cereal seems to be an issue. And I had to, like, tell on that. And I was like, oh. But the cereal was becoming a problem. And I didn't want to relapse on cereal. So I had to give it up. So for me, that's what it is. I don't play with it. I just talk about it. And it's just not an option for me today. So.
Thank you. Okay, I guess that's it. It's now time to close the meeting. Let's again thank Elisa, Michelle, and Rod. For those staying, the luncheon will be held in the Pacifica Ballroom B. Doors open at 12 p.m. Lunch is served at 12:15. There will also be a luncheon speaker. The lunch purchase is not required to hear the speaker. Additionally, there are marathon meetings occurring on the hour, every hour, with a final meeting starting at 11 p.m. Please check your schedules. Thank you. Please stand and join me in the third step prayer.
Keep coming back.